Tuesday. Welcome back to another episode of Morning Coffee with your host, Rick Alexander. Of course, this week we are covering Strength to Love by Martin Luther King Jr., which is a collection of his most famous sermons, or most revered, or I guess most asked for sermons. Either way, a bunch of sermons that have really started changing my life as I've started reading them, which is why I wanted to share them with you guys. And for people that don't know, I would say to definitely listen to these in order, because I'm going to continue to build on the philosophical assumptions that I made in the previous episode. And part of that is, you know, Martin Luther King, he was a Christian minister. So I'm going to talk about the worldview that he's looking through, and I'm going to rely on some of the work that I had done previously, where I talked about prior to this worldview, sort of entering the world, we didn't really have an objective moral framework that recognized the inherent dignity in human life. And so it's real important that we understand that that is sort of the base building block by which Martin Luther King Jr. is looking at the world, the way that he's talking to the world, right? But understand that he's talking to a world that has, for most of its existence, existed with a dominance hierarchy, and it has not recognized the inherent sanctity and value of human life. And I really don't think that we can have any kind of conversation about potential or growth or success unless we're starting from the same place, and unless we're starting from a place that recognizes the inherent dignity in human life. And I think that I'm going to talk about the idea of God because he's going to talk about it. But the way that I want to talk about it is the same way that I talked about it yesterday, which is to recognize that every single person has a hierarchical value structure. And at the very top of that value system is something. Now, sometimes it's God, but for a lot of people, it's not, right? For a lot of people, it's whatever finds its way there. Now, unfortunately, there's a lot of things that you could put in I call it your God spot, right? That aren't analogous to love. If you put love there, you have something that's inclusive. You have something that's inviting. You have something that's expansive. It's calling you to a bigger reality, and it's inviting everybody around you into that reality. But if you can also put other things, like I've seen a lot of people that put addictions there. Growing up, I had a friend whose brother got really addicted into hard drugs, and I think we were in like eighth grade at the time. And I remember we're on the bus ride home, and she's talking to me and she's telling me about how her brother basically sold all of her family heirlooms and a bunch of stuff from her dad who had passed away in the past. He basically pawned them in order to get drugs. And I remember having the thought of like, how do you get there, right? How do you get to the point where you think that this is how humans should be, or is even a remote good idea for your life? Well, I'll tell you what happens is you put the wrong thing in your God spot. Right? You put something that hijacks your hierarchical value system. It rearranges what you think is important. And the way that you know that you've put something in the very top of your value system that shouldn't be there is because it will ask more for itself and it will give less to you, right? That's the problem with addiction, right? It's a narrowing of what excites you. And so when you see people that get addicted to things, what happens is it's going to cause you to make decisions that are going to get more to the addiction. And in the meantime, it's going to give less and less to you, right? And so you could think about that same thing with if that is a drug, like the high, for example, it's going to get diminished and you're going to have to continue to do more. It's going to get more expensive. You're going to have to give more of yourself to it, and it's going to give less and less to you. And so it's a self-defeating end in some way. The Greeks understood this personification as the god Nemesis, right? It's the self-defeating evil. It can't continue on. And I think if we look back at history, we can look at the people like Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Jesus, the people that had a legacy that survived, right? We tell time by when Jesus died, right? Like Martin Luther King's legacy has only continued to be expanded in the US. Like, I think that the reason that these people win is because they've not aligned themselves with self-defeating ends. And that's the thing. You look back, look at all the statues that are being torn right down. What happens if you oppose love? So today we're going to talk about transformed nonconformists. And I just wanted to point out, like, I'm saying this because, of course, this is the value system that Martin Luther King Jr., you know, preached by. So he starts off with a scripture from the Bible, Romans 12:2, be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. So this whole idea, this whole speech is really about conformity. He says, do not conform is really difficult advice in a generation when crowd pressures have unconsciously conditioned our minds and feet to move to the rhythmic drumbeat of the status quo. Many voices and forces urge us to choose a path of least resistance and bid us never to fight for an unpopular cause and never to be found in a pathetic minority of two or three. What he's asking us to do is to face our social fears of not belonging, right? At the end of the day, if you're not careful, what happens is you put the thing that's at the very top of your value system, your North Star, becomes culture, right? Understand that culture is something that is, it's always based on the whims of people of the time, right? So there's no transcendent ideal if culture is the thing that you're aiming to conform to. And so you'll always have to be different, right? There'll always be something that you have to conform to if society is sort of your North Star. But we all have these social fears that are very deep. And this is why these struggles are so deeply human. This is why we're struggling with it even today, because you have the struggle for belonging, right? Because people that didn't belong through most of history were ostracized and were not able to, they just didn't continue to live, right? Because it, like, reality was harsh. And so we had to have some sort of belonging. So he's asking us, though, to set our sights on a transcendent value that asks us to be convicted, to stand up above culture or regardless of culture. He goes on to say, we are called to be people of conviction, not conformity, of moral nobility, not social respectability. We're commanded to live different in according to a higher loyalty. So when we talk about a higher loyalty, right, this is Martin Luther King Jr.'s world, right? He's inviting you into this higher loyalty. And that's what I think is so compelling about his work. It's always inviting. He's always asking us to be a better version of who we are. He says, as Christians, we must never surrender our supreme loyalty to any time-bound custom or earthbound idea, for at the heart of our universe is a higher reality, God and his kingdom of love, to which we must be conformed. So understand that when you set your sights on something, remember how, just like we talked about drug addiction, if you put the wrong thing at the top of your value system, if it's not love, if it's something that's self-defeating, it hijacks what you think is important. It'll rearrange, so you're making all kinds of decisions based off of whatever that top value is, and it can lead you into a place that you don't want to be, right? Into more dis-ease, into more division, so that there's something else that you have to be against in this life. And you'll never, when you live this way, you'll never run out of things to be against, right? The world will always present more problems to your plans, let's say. He says, who doubts that today most men are anvils and are shaped by the patterns of the majority? Or to change the figure, most people, and Christians in particular, are thermometers that record or register the temperature of majority opinion, not thermostats that transform and regulate the temperature of society. So there's two things that I want to direct your attention here to. The first is, if you'll notice in his work in yesterday's and today's, I'll continue to do it, he's always calling out his congregation, his worldview. He's calling out himself first. He's inviting us into a bigger reality, but he's starting and he's from the inside out. You can think about how many people try to change the world but can't change themselves. Right? They're always going to be impotent in enacting any kind of real change, because actual change has to come from the inside out. And so the first thing in that passage I wanted to just draw your attention to is this idea that, like, a true revolutionary, they're in it for the real deal, right? They're not in it to change other people. Like, they're part of the world that they're trying to change, right? Be the change that you wish to see in the world today. That Gandhi quote, I think that it's really important that we understand it has to start with us. Can't start somewhere else. And the other thing I wanted to say is, I love this analogy. He's talking about most of us are just thermometers, right? We're just saying whatever the tide is, whatever the culture saying is important, that's what we're saying is important. And like, you can turn on Instagram and just realize how true that really is, right? How we really are just basically whatever culture thinks important, that's what I think's important. And so he's asking us, though, to be something else. He's asking us to be a thermostat. What's interesting, if you guys remember yesterday, I talk about how love is one of these things that has an alchemical ability to transform things in our world to other things. This is why a romantic relationship that's a true place of love is so important, because you can take your insecurities, right? You can take your pain and you can transform them. If this container, if it's true love that this container has, you can take your insecurities into this place and you can leave as something better, as something different. This is what love has the ability to do. Now, something I want to talk about too is this fact that we all have basic human needs, right? We can't, no matter what your preferences are, you still have needs based on the kind of biological organism that you are, right? And what you are is human. And so you have a human need to be seen and to be heard for who you actually are. Now, you can think about this in your life. The people that you probably feel the closest to, let's say, whether that's romantic partners or best friends or family members, like whoever your person is, most likely they're your person because when you are with that person, you get to put everything down, right? You get to actually just be who you are. No games, no charades, no coping mechanisms. You get to put all of that at the door and just be who you are. And that, there's something in reinvigorating about that idea, about being with somebody authentically who you are, right? It, like I said, it's a basic human need. We all want to be seen and we all want to be heard. Now, what's interesting is, you remember yesterday I talked about how you know two tribes are throwing rocks back and forth, and they both believe that they're okay. They both believe that they're right. And then somebody walks along and he says, well, hey, look, if regardless of whether you think you're right or not, if nobody ever stops, this will just continue because you both think that you're right. So is there something that you could believe that would position, or a belief that could be higher than this, that would allow you to live not in opposition to each other, to coexist, let's say? Well, what's interesting is we all want this feeling of belonging. But the way that we go about getting it is inherently flawed because we look out into the world. I did a lot of research on how humans develop themselves for my second book. I have a whole chapter called On Becoming, which is like, how do we end up the way that we are, right? Well, one of the things that we do is we look out into the world and then we have a idea of what success is or whatever we think that we want. And then we imitate that thing. And then over time, we integrate that into our personality. Now, if we have a low intelligence level or we are, for whatever reason, just not good at integrating behavior, we end up as like a cheap knockoff version of whatever that successful thing is. And this is why in life, successful people don't really have to worry about guarding their ideas, right? The business people, they're like, I have a business idea, but you can't tell anyone. The people that are actually out in the world doing it, they know that, you know, there's a million ideas and nobody's ever going to be able to do it like they do it. We're all looking out into the world and we want belonging. We want to be accepted for who we are. And unfortunately, in order to get belonging, the way that we go about it is we mimic things that we see out in our world. And so we subjugate parts of ourselves and we come up with all of these different coping mechanisms. They're basically, your coping mechanisms are it's the mask that you wear in the drama that is life, right? So however you want the world out there to perceive you, that's your persona, that's your coping mechanism. And as I said, the people that you probably feel the closest with in this life are the people that you don't have to be that for, right? So here's the interesting thing about love, right? This person, somebody, a Martin Luther King type has to come along and say, listen, if it doesn't change, like if you don't change, it never will. If you don't stop, it never will. So both of you, you know, you could think about two people that are both trying to be something they're not. They both want the same thing, which is to be accepted for who they are. And so they're just in this never-ending cycle that's going to spin out of control. If somebody has the emotional intelligence to just get off of the Ferris wheel and to invite other people in to truly set love as their North Arrow, they invite other people into their world, they give people permission to be exactly who they are, because remember, love is always inclusive, it's always belonging, right? Everything belongs. And what happens is that then they give you permission to do the same, right? And so you can understand, we all want belonging, we all want to be seen and heard for who we are, but we have all of these coping mechanisms and all of these ways that we subjugate ourselves for culture, for society, for who we think the world wants us to be. And if nobody ever stops, it just won't ever stop. And so somebody has to transfix themselves on love, to invite other people in to live and be in a different way. And I think that's what Martin Luther King Jr. is doing. He also has a Thomas Jefferson quote in here that says, I've sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. And I think what he's really talking about is like culture. That's the tyranny over the mind of man. There's all these things that you probably want for your life, but have learned that you can't have, or learned that it's not acceptable for you to go after. And so we have to have some sort of transcendental value that calls us to conviction, to stand up out of culture, to stand up out of society, to be the one that changes the cycle, that lives different, that invites other people into how we are going to be. And then I wanted to end here. He says, we preach comforting sermons and avoid saying anything from our pulpit that might disturb the respectable views of the comfortable members of our congregation. And just remember, like, he's always calling out who he is first, right? He's calling out his worldview first. He's saying, listen, the world has to change and it has to start with us, right? We're called to live different. We're called to live better. We're the ones that can't be a thermometer. We're the ones that have to be the thermostat to get this train on the right tracks. Otherwise, like I said in yesterday's episode, otherwise we're just providing hospice care for a mass extinction event. Somebody's got to be different. Someone's got to be better. One of the tribes has to put the rock down, right? One of the people in a social circle has to just put down the persona to invite other people into that authentic place of acceptance. And then when everybody has permission to do that, what you're going to find is that we're living in a completely different world than the one that we've manufactured with personas and with coping mechanisms and with all the things that we think that we have to be. That's been my experience anyway. I love you guys. Hope you have an amazing day. We'll talk tomorrow on Morning Coffee.